Okay, last week we started looking at Jacob, and we hurriedly went over some things that I would like to go back and look at just a little bit more. We kind of gave a brief synopsis of what happened when Jacob got the blessing that was supposed to be for Esau. And so let's look at Genesis 27. And we're going to start, we're going to read verse 12 and 13. We're kind of jumping in the middle here, but here she is trying to persuade Jacob to get the blessing, and she's told him what to do and how to prepare it. But Jacob is at least concerned. I don't know that he is concerned. He wants the blessing, but he's a little concerned. He says, Jacob, we'll start in 11. Jacob answered his mother Rebekah, "Behold, Esau, my brother, is a hairy man, and I'm a smooth man. Perhaps my father will feel me. Then I will be as a deceiver in his sight, and I will bring upon myself a curse and not a blessing." And so, you know, he's concerned about this. Of course, Rebekah says, "Don't worry about it. Your curse be on me. Only obey my voice and go do what I've told you," basically. That's what she tells him. And so, we see that this is all Rebekah's idea, but Jacob, I don't know how old he is at this time, but he's not a young kid. It's not like he's a teenager. He's older, and he should have enough willingness to stand up and say, "No, I can't do this because it's not right in the sight of God." But at this point in Jacob's life, is he a very God-fearing man or even God-thinking man? He doesn't appear to be. There's nothing we read that he's thinking about God or putting God first. It's just like when he took the birthright. He wasn't concerned about this was what God gave him. It's just, I want what God gave him. I'm not concerned about him. I want it. And so then we go down to chapter 27, verse 31 through 33. Susan Hendrick, would you read that, please?
"Then he also made savory food and brought it to his father. And he said to his father, 'Let my father arise and eat of his son's game, that you may bless me.' And Isaac his father said to him, 'Who are you?' And he said, 'I am your son, your firstborn son, Esau.' Then Isaac trembled violently and said, 'Who was he then that hunted game and brought it to me, so that I ate of it all before you came and blessed him? Yes, and he shall be blessed.'"
Okay, this is what Jacob, this is when he's brought it, and now Esau has come in, and Jacob realizes that something untoward has happened here. And so he was very upset. He did not want this. He did not intend to bless Jacob. But evidently, and I have never understood why he couldn't say because he got it deceptively, then it's no good. It was for a lie. But that wasn't God's will, evidently, because Jacob says, "Yes, he shall be blessed." And then, of course, Esau is very upset, and I would say rightfully so. I mean, because he has been usurped, and we'll see what he thinks about that. Carol, would you read verse 33 through 35, please? Or 34 and 35. I've already read 33.
"Then Isaac trembled violently and said, 'Who was he?'"
That's okay. Start with 34.
Okay. "With 34. When Esau heard the words of his father, he cried out with an exceedingly great and bitter cry and said to his father, 'Bless me, even me also, O my father.' And he said, 'Your brother came deceitfully and has taken away your blessing.'"
And so that this is Isaac's reaction is he's upset, but there is nothing he can do. He says in verse 36, Isaac says, Esau said, "Then is he not rightly named Jacob? For he has supplanted me these two times. He took away my birthright, and now he has taken away my blessing." And he said, "Have you not reserved a blessing for me? Isn't there anything left that you can give me?" And so I can't imagine how he must feel, because I don't know. They must have known there was a blessing coming. Of course, we heard them talk about it, but Esau also knew something about this blessing. When he went to do what his father told him, he was expecting something in return. And so he wanted this blessing. I guess he thought, "I've lost the birthright, at least I will get the blessing." But it doesn't work out that way.
But he said, "He took away my birthright." He actually gave me.
That's right. You're exactly right. It wasn't like he pled for it. "Oh, you know, I can't do that. That's worth something to me."
When Rebecca was pregnant, didn't the angel tell her that the older would serve the younger?
Yes, he did.
About having Isaac, he gave Hagar to have a son, and then that wasn't what God had planned. We don't
know how God had. And isn't that interesting? Because in the old law, when the old law was given, we read last week where if you had two wives and the unfavored one had the first child, that child got the birthright. But God, that since it was, they were trying to help God out. And it didn't work out. And that's the only thing I can think of. God had a plan, and when God puts a plan in place, his plan is going to come to fruition. We can't change it. We'd like to think we can, but we can't. What you're talking about is in 25:23, chapter 25, verse 23, the Lord said to her, "Two nations are in your womb, and two peoples will be separated from your body. And one people shall be stronger than the other, and the older shall serve the younger." And so this was God's plan. And so
I wonder if she told Isaac.
I don't know. I don't know if she ever told him that. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we had we had one of these great big Bibles that was this big? Yeah. You would think, but I don't know some women. I know a lot of women that know things that I think they should tell their husbands, and they don't. But they tell other people, but they don't tell him. I've had that happen to me more than once. People tell me that, and I say, "Well, that's really something your husband should know." "Oh, no. We'll just, let's see how it plays out." Well, sometimes it plays out okay, and sometimes it doesn't. So there's the only time that I ever don't tell Steve something, unless I forget. The older I get, the more that happens. If I'm studying with somebody and talking with somebody and they talk to me about a situation and they ask me to keep it confident, I will. I won't even tell him. I tell them, the only thing I tell them, if it's somebody that he's an elder over and their soul is at stake, at some point, if you don't bring this to the elders or do what you need to do, I will have to, because I have to put God first. And if you continue on in this path and don't change, I will have to talk to the elder. I'll have to talk to my husband and he'll take care of the rest. But so I don't know, but that would be interesting to know whether or not she told him. You would think if she had, that he would not be surprised at all of this that's happening. He would not be so angry when Jacob deceitfully takes the thing, because the blessing was part of the blessing and the birthright to me were almost the same. Seems like it's what. So I guess if one got it, then God saw that the other one got it. I don't
know.
Well,
he knew. It
wouldn't
be deceptive.
No, because Isaac would say, "Well, this is God's way of making that work out."
Yeah.
Okay, and then of course we know Isaac. What Isaac decided. We talked about that last week. He bore a grudge, and so he was going to see that he left this earth.
It's because he got it over down the road.
Yes, he did. Well, you know, he wasn't a poor man.
No.
God blessed him. He did not get the birthright that included the promises that we're going to look at today in Jacob. But he didn't have anything to complain about as far as material things, physical things. Okay. How did this affect their relationship? What I meant was between Jacob and Esau. I didn't make that clear, but anyway, so we'll see how everybody answered. How did this affect their Jacob and Esau's relationship, at least in the beginning?
He wanted to kill him.
Yes.
After his mother died.
Yes. And that was interesting. He didn't say anything about his mother because there was somewhere in my reading last night, and I meant to take note of it, where he talked about his mother's son. You know, so it wasn't... Where was that? Anyway, I'll look it up. But so it wasn't like... I don't remember him calling her. It wasn't his mother, it was his mother's son. Where was that? I thought I'd find it right quick. Okay, anyway, we'll look up that later. What effect did this have? What effect did Rebecca's action have on her and Jacob? Ma'am? Yes, they lost both of their sons, didn't they? Basically. Because they sent Jacob away in verse 27:46. Amanda, would you read that? And in just a minute, I'll get you to read 28:25 also. But anyway, read verse 46 of 27.
Rebecca said to Isaac, "I am tired of living because of the daughters of Heth. Okay. If Jacob takes a wife from the daughters of Heth, by these from the daughters of the land, what good will my life be?"
Okay, and then we go on to see that Isaac called him in and blessed him and charged him and sent him away and told him where to go and who to get a wife from. And then read verse 5, please, Amanda. Of chapter
28. Then Isaac
sent
Jacob away.
He went to
Aram,
the Lebanon,
Laban,
Aramean.
I'm sorry.
Aramean. I don't know. It just, however you say it's fine.
The brother of Rebecca, the mother of Jacob and Esau.
And so he got sent away. And I don't know that Rebecca ever saw him again. When he comes back, it talks about his father, but it doesn't say anything about Rebecca. So here is her beloved son that is sent away. And I don't know that, at least as far as I know of, did she ever see him again or see any of her grandchildren, because he was sent back to where she came from. And then Esau, in chapter 28, verse 6 through 9, Elizabeth, can you read?
Yes.
6
through
9.
Now, Esau saw that Isaac had left Jacob and sent him away to Padan Aram to take to himself a wife from there. And that when he left him, he charged him, saying, "You shall not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan." And that Jacob had obeyed his father and his mother and had gone to Padan Aram. So Esau saw that the daughters of Canaan displeased his father Isaac, and Esau went to Ishmael and married, because the wives that he had, Mahalath, the daughter of Ishmael, Abraham's son, the sister of Naboth.
He knew that this would be displeasing to his parents. So what kind of relationship are you having with the son that makes what she talked about in verse 20 and verse 46? What good will my life be if they take that? She wouldn't.
It didn't sound like they honored her at all.
No, especially Esau. He was his father's favorite, not his mother's. And what another side jaunt of this is having favorites in your children. Every time you see a child that's a favorite, it causes problems with the other children. We saw that with Joseph. We see that here. And so, you know, I can't understand parents. Some children are easier to... I guess not easier to love because you have your love for them, but they're easier to tolerate because of their demeanor or their the way they treat you. But it doesn't help anything to make it known, well known in the family, that this is the favored son. And, you know, Joel is the one that talks, I'm the favorite. And Jennifer says, no, I am. And I said, I'm sorry, but neither one of you are. I said, I love all of you. And sometimes they'll say, well, you love them more than you love me. I say, no, I don't. They're teasing around. But I can't imagine if they really in their heart felt that way, that I loved one of them more than I loved the other. And it just causes issues. And so that's a lesson we can take away from this, if nothing else. Don't love one of your children and let it be known that one of them is your favorite. Yes, one may be harder to raise and harder to get where you want them to be, but when they get there, it's such a wonderful blessing. And so anyway, from a human, any other questions or comments on the getting of the blessing? From a human perspective, what would we think should have happened to Jacob in all this?
He should have lost the blessing and the birthright.
Why should he get this?
Right.
He got it. You know, he didn't love his brother enough to even give him a meal, because his brother felt like he was starving, and he said, well, what have you got but you can give me? And then he knew exactly what he wanted. I want the birthright. Give me the birthright and I'll give you food. How cold and callous and unloving is that? That does not sound like somebody that has a heart for God. That sounds like somebody that's out for me.
Well, at that point, he probably didn't.
That's, yeah.
But God could see down the stream of time and know that he would be the man that...
Yes, he knew that. God sees, God knows when we're, he knew before these two boys were born what kind of hearts they were going to have. And that blows my mind, but God knows sometimes that there is going to be people that will not accept him and will not love him. But he knew that about these two boys. And he knew what kind of heart he had. And yet, Isaac must have had some indication of how all this was going to turn out. In Genesis 28, 33 and 34, we didn't read this on purpose because I wanted to read it here.
What
chapter are you saying? 28,
3
through 5. Okay. Did I say 38? Okay, whatever. I'm sorry. If y'all didn't catch the Exodus and Genesis when you did the lesson, you kind of got an inkling of what kind of teacher you've got here, and that she's got issues. Genesis 28, verse 3 and 4. Yes. He says, this is what Jacob says, Isaac says to Jacob when he sends him away. May God Almighty bless you and make you fruitful and multiply you that you may become a company of peoples. May he also give you the blessing of Abraham. And to your descendants with you, that you may possess the land of your sojournings, which God gave to Abraham. So in the blessing came the promises. That's where the promises were. It didn't necessarily have to be the right of the firstborn if it was a blessing, evidently. So this was why, especially Rebecca, wanted Jacob to have it rather than Esau, because he was her favorite. How can all of this, and we've touched on this a little bit, how can all of what we see in the way God dealt with Jacob, what can that help us learn about people that we know? And maybe people that have made mistakes but have repented. Is it hard sometimes when somebody who's done something terrible, whether it like fornication, and they've torn up families, but they come back and maybe the wife says, or the husband, whichever one was sinned against, I don't want you back, and she has that right. But does she have the right to tear him down spiritually, continue, if he's truly repented? No, she doesn't. What we have to remember is God forgives us as we forgive others. I've heard people say, I could never forgive them for that. I say, ooh, if they're a Christian, I try to remind them that God will not forgive you. If you won't There's nothing that anybody can do to me that I can say I will not forgive you. God teaches that. What do I do to God? Maybe I don't commit murder. I don't go out committing fornication. I don't drink. I don't lie. I don't steal. Why should I have to fool with somebody who's done that to me? Because God said if they're truly penitent, and how do we know that they're penitent?
By their actions.
By their actions. That's right. We had a prime case here when a young man came forward the second time for serial adultery. And there were people who said, I don't believe him. Well, to be honest with you, I didn't know whether I should believe him or not. But you have to give them the opportunity. If we don't help them and try to encourage them and do things that will make their repentance easier to hold up, if everybody just turns their back on him and won't talk to him, won't speak to him, won't have anything at all to do with him, and we're supposed to be a family and he was part of that family, he did wind up leaving again and he's back to his old ways, I guess. But I did not want him to be able to say nobody there cared enough to even try to help me. And so that's what we have to think about. And those are hard decisions. But we have to take them at their word and watch their actions. We've got to give them time to prove their actions. If you don't give people time, God gave Jacob time. And we're going to talk today about Jacob's time coming. And so we have to, God will continue to bless Jacob, even though with all the deceitfulness in his life, after he repented. And we're going to see what I think in these next set of verses came about and shows his repentance. And not everybody's going to get what he got. But we have something greater. We're not going to have God come to us in a vision. But we have the whole Bible, starting from the beginning of time all the way through Revelation. The revelation that was given to the seven churches, that we can read and we can see God's consistency and we can see God's promises always come true. And so we have something greater, I think, than he did. Okay, we've already talked about what excuse Rachel used for sending him away. She didn't want him to have a wife from these people. So let's turn to Genesis, and I've got chapter 8, and it's supposed to be chapter 28. I'll tell you what, my proofreader didn't do a very good job.
Just because you said age a while ago, I have a little note here that says Jacob was 77 years old. And that's from Steve, I guess, because
okay. Okay. Well, that's very possible because these men, by the time he got a wife and had children, he was not a kid. He wasn't a kid when he started out if he was 77, and that's, I don't have that note. I'll have to go back and see where I put it. But,
they lived so long, didn't they?
Yes, well, they were still living quite long, not quite as long as before the flood at this point. But they lived, Abraham didn't have Isaac until he was 100 years old.
Yeah.
And so, I don't remember if it says how old Isaac lived to be. Probably have that marked somewhere. But these are people that God has made up his mind that are going to bring about what we're going to read about today. Okay, what happened to Jacob on his journey and how did it affect him?
Another little note.
Okay.
On 29:1 by Jacob, it says he's 84 years old. So there's 7 years in there somewhere.
Okay. Well, we don't know exactly how long it was after he stole the blessing before he actually left to go away. So, and of course, we don't know how long it took him to take this journey. Remember, you can't hop on an airplane and fly over there or get on a train and go over there. And so maybe it took him that long. I don't know. I'm not as good with the dates as Steve is. Chronology is something that's real interesting to him, and it's interesting to me when he tells me, but it doesn't stick.
Thank you.
Okay. That's why I do what you normally do. I write down, and if somehow I've missed those, I'll have to go back and check on that. Okay, what happened to him on this journey, and how did it affect him? Yes. He had the dream, and he saw this ladder ascending and angels going up and down on it. And then God spoke to him. Whose turn is it to read? Bobby, would you read? Did you read? You haven't read, have you? Read chapter 29, verse 13 through 15, please. Let me see. 29. Hang on. I don't know how in the world I've got all of these. No, it's 28. 28. In a certain place, chapter, verse 11 of 28, he says he came to a certain place and spent the night there. So it's 28, 13 through 15. Genesis.
This is about the ladder, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is a different version. So.
Okay.
Then Jacob saw the Lord standing above the ladder, and he said, I am the Lord, the God of Abraham, your grandfather, and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are now sleeping. Your descendants will be as many as the dust of the earth. They will spread west and east, north and south, and all the families of the earth will be blessed through you and your descendants. I am with you and will protect you everywhere you go and will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you.
Okay, so what three promises here that were given to Abraham and Isaac are now given to Jacob? The land promise.
Great number.
Great nation. Right, or number.
And seed.
And the seed promise. So, these were the promises that God had made to Abraham and Isaac. And now he's given this to Jacob. And I don't know if surely Jacob had heard of the promises that were given to Abraham and Isaac, because he mentions them here. And they were the ones that he had given to, these are the things that he had given to them. He was the father of Abraham and Isaac anyway. And I'm sure Jacob would know of that promise. Surely that is not something that's kept a secret. But anyway, he's making it to Jacob now. And evidently, how did this affect Jacob? What was the effect on him?
Well, at first he was afraid.
Oh, yes, he was very afraid. That's the first reaction. That's right. But now we get down to verse 16 and 17. Nadine, would you read verse 16 and 17 of Genesis 28?
Then Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. He was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? There is none other than this is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven.
So what does it seem like at this point Jacob at least has the beginning seeds of?
Fear
of God and faith. He now, this, you know, this is the place of God. This is the gate to heaven, is the way he saw it, because this is where God had talked to him. And so now it seems to me that now he is looking more at God as someone that's real. I don't know that God was real to Jacob before, it seems like. I don't know. But then early the next morning, Melissa, would you read verse 18 and 19?
So Jacob rose early in the morning and took the stone that he had put under his head and set it up as a pillar and poured oil on its top. He called the name of that place Bethel.
Okay, and I looked, there's a note in the margin, and I looked it up to see what it was, and Bethel translated means house of God, and Luz means almond tree. So it went from being an almond tree to the house of God, at least for Jacob. In verse 20 and 20, first of all, when he poured the oil on it, that was one of the way they gave offerings. Now remember, he's traveling and doesn't have much to do in the way of an offering. You know, he's not traveling with animals, I don't suppose, not at this point. And but he seems like he gives the Lord, he worships God and gives him an offering. He makes, sets up this pillar, kind of as an altar to me, that they didn't call it an altar, but that's what I would translate it to be. And then in verse 20 and 21, he makes a vow. Jacob made a vow saying, if God will be with me and will keep me on my journey, on this journey that I take, and will give me food to eat and garments to wear, and I return to my father's house in safety, then the Lord shall be my God. This stone which I have set up as a pillar will be God's house, and all of you, and all that you give me, I will surely give to you a tenth. So now he's worshiping and serving God and promising God that a tenth of anything you bless me with, I will give to you. And this is before the old law is given. But Jacob, this is Jacob's way of honoring God. So he's gone from a man of out for himself and running away from his brother because he's scared of him, to a believer in God and a worshiper of God and one who is trusting in God. And it's interesting in what he asks for. He says, if you will give me food to eat and garments to wear. He doesn't ask for riches. In other words, he asks, if you will sustain my life and give me the things that I need for life, then I will, then you will be my God. And then he goes on to promise to give a tenth of whatever he does earn to God. And so to me, this is the pivotal point in Jacob's life. And now he's kind of trapped going from one direction to the other. He was running away, and now he's really going, he's still going the same direction, but he's going with God. And he knows that God is going to be with him and take care of him and bless him. Again, from a human perspective, does this seem right, that he should have been given this great blessing of being the one that the seed's going to come through? Because basically that's what he's promised him. The Savior of this world is going to be your descendant. What greater blessing could anybody have than that, knowing that one of their offspring farther down the line is going to be the greatest person to ever walk the earth? That's a great blessing. I don't know if he totally understood it, but a lot of time these men understood more than we give them credit for. Abraham looked for the new city and the new kingdom. He understood. Abraham understood. It doesn't state that when we read about Abraham in the Bible, but we're told in the New Testament that he looked for that. He knew what it meant. He understood it. But again, what do we want when we've been wronged or we feel like somebody else has done wrong? What do we want rather than revenge, or what we would call justice? It's revenge, but we want justice. And God is a just God, but he's also merciful. And so what we need to realize is God gives mercy to the one who will turn his heart to him, and that's what he has done to Jacob. He knew Jacob's heart, and he knew that Jacob would be the man that he needed to be. Not that he wouldn't make any mistakes. He was the one that showed the big favoritism and caused all the problems amongst his boys. But he still was a godly man and trusted God and followed and did what God wanted him to do. Okay, any questions or comments on Jacob? Okay, we can see that Jacob was an imperfect servant. And when we look at ourselves and think I don't know about everybody else, but sometimes I feel real inadequate. I feel kind of imperfect because I make mistakes. I don't do things that I wish I had have done. That's my biggest problem. I have good intentions that don't get fulfilled. And But I know that God's a God of mercy. And so that gives me hope, and that gives me encouragement to try to do better. But to know that God will, when I ask Him, forgive me for the things that I've done wrong. Okay, we've got about 10 minutes, so we're going to do a little bit on Moses. So let's turn to Exodus. Everybody's lesson says Genesis, but it's in Exodus, and I'm sorry about that. I proofread these things. I get Steve to look them over, but he's more looking for my sentence structure, if I need a comma, than he is for correcting my missed verses. Explain Moses' first encounter with God and how he reacted. What was his first encounter? I think Moses knew about God and he believed in God, but he had fled to save his life, and he wants to go back now to see about his people. Because even back then, it seems like he felt like they thought he should have known something about him. Of course, Moses more than likely knew a lot more than we give him credit for, because who raised Moses for the first several years of his life?
His mother,
who was a Jew, who knew about why he was saved. They said he was a beautiful child. Well, everybody thinks their child's beautiful. There was a little more in that statement than what it would mean to us. So what was his first appearance with God? How did God appear to him first?
Burning bush.
And he didn't just see a burning bush. What else happened at the burning bush? That's right. He heard God's voice from the middle of the bush. And he talked to him and he told him some things. And so what was Moses' reaction when God explained what he wanted him to do? Let's look at Exodus chapter 3, verse... where I want to start. Let's see what he wanted him to do first. Susan, read verse 7 and 8 in Exodus chapter 3.
And the Lord said, I have surely seen the oppression of my people who are in Egypt, and have given heed to their crying because of their taskmasters, for I am aware of their sufferings. So I have come down to deliver them from the power of the Egyptians, and to bring them up from that land to a good and spacious land, to a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanite, and the Hittite, and the Amorite, and the Perizzite, and the Hivite, and the Jebusite.
Okay. So this is, he's telling Moses what he's going to do in verse 10. He says, come now and I'll send you to Pharaoh so that you may bring my people, the sons of Israel, out of Egypt. And what was Moses' reaction?
Who, me?
Yeah, that's exactly what I put. Who, me? Because that's basically what he said. Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh? And why should I bring them out? You know, this is just not in Moses' plans for what he wants out of his life. You know, I think he had some idea that God was going to, he was going to do something, but this wasn't what he had in mind. If he did have anything in mind, he surely knew he didn't want to do this.
Well, he probably already felt rejected.
That's right. Well,
that's why he left.
That's right. That's why he left. He was afraid his own people were going to kill him. And of course, he knew that the Egyptians would kill him for sure, if people did. So God talks to him about this excuse, and then we get down to verse 13, and he has another excuse. Carol, read verse 13 of chapter 3.
Then Moses said to God, behold, I am going to the sons of Israel, and I will say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you. Now they may say to me, what is his name? What shall I say to them?
So now his excuse is, are they going to believe me? What am I going to do about that? They're not going to believe me. That's what he's thinking. So, you know, and then God gives him an answer in verse 14 through 16. Amanda, would you read that, please? 14 through 16 of Exodus 3.
God said to Moses, I am whom I am. And he said, thus you shall say to the Lord, I am has sent thee to you. God has been more certain than Moses. Thus you shall say to the Son of Israel, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name forever, and this is my memorial.
That's far enough. And then he tells them, you go and you gather the elders of Israel together, and you tell them that the Lord, the God of your fathers, has sent me. And so, did that just satisfy Moses and he's ready to go? Oh, no. Chapter 4, verse 1 through 5, he's got some more excuses. What if they will not believe me or listen to what I say? For they may say, the Lord has not appeared to you. The Lord said to him, what is in your hand? And this is where he gives him the staff. He has a staff, and what happens when the Lord tells him to throw it on the ground? Turn to a serpent. That's right. And then what happens when he picks it up? Back to a staff again. That's right. And so, in chapter 4, verse 5, Elizabeth, would you read that?
That they may believe that the Lord, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has appeared to you.
This is what that is for. It's, that's, okay. Shouldn't that take care of it? But Moses just all of a sudden, okay, I'm on board. Oh, no. He's still got some more excuses. What excuse does he give in Exodus 4, 10 through 12? Not a good speaker. Moses said to the Lord, please, Lord, I have never been an eloquent man, neither recently nor in the past, nor since. You have spoken to your servant, for I am slow of speech and slow of tongue. And so God just says, okay. We'll forget about all this and go on. No. In verse 13, Bobby, would you read verse 13 through, let me see. Read verse 13 through 15.
13 through 15.
Mm-hmm.
But Moses said, please, Lord, send someone else. The Lord became angry with Moses and said, your brother Aaron from the family of Levi is a skilled speaker. He is already coming to meet you, and he will be happy when he sees you. You will speak to Aaron and tell him what to say, and I will help both of you to speak and will teach you what to do.
Okay. My version says the anger of the Lord burned against Moses. He wasn't just a little angry. He was mad. That's the way we would put it. You know, he's about had enough. And so, to me, God shows he's very angry. And he tells him, I'm sending you Aaron, and he's going to help you. And then goes on in 16 and 17 and tells him, I'll tell you and you tell Aaron what to say. He will be your mouth. And then he told him, you shall take the staff in your hand. So you'll have Aaron and your staff. Now, I want you to do what I told you to do. So he finally is going to go back. If all we focus on is this section, these few verses right here, at least in the beginning, what kind of servant would you classify Moses as? That's right. A reluctant at best, and really an almost unwilling. He went, but he does not seem too eager about it. Up to this point. So, okay, that gets us up to when he actually goes and gets us past that point. So we will start there our next class period.